Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to 2016. Hi, this is Foster Brown, and this is the Internet Advisor. My delight to be with you on this afternoon, and we got a great show ahead of us here. We're going to be looking ahead at the year. We've all got our crystal balls aligned. The entire team is in here. We're going to be coming up with predictions for the year 2016. Stand by for the Internet Advisor. Welcome again once more to a brand new year, 2016, and we have got a great show lined up for you today. And this year, we're going to have the evidence. Gentlemen, we're going to have the evidence. We have it now. I have it in the form of predictions that have been written down, and that's the evidence I'm talking about that we will trot out at the end of this year.
So you're saying that last year's evidence is missing?
It is. It is. I couldn't find it anywhere.
No electronic signatures anywhere.
No electronic signatures anywhere. But
So, Cal, what we need to do is make sure we destroy Foster's hard drive between now and next year.
You know, in the old days, you used to be able to not write things down on paper because then they'll know, you know, they'll be able to trace it. You know, I just have to send it to you in electronic format, you'll lose it.
Yes, I know. I have that reputation.
Actually, Gary, I don't think we have to worry about that. You give Foster enough time, he'll wipe it himself.
Oh, this point is cruel.
If history repeats itself.
If history repeats itself, is right. I have had the distinction of being able to eliminate all sorts of good things like drives.
That's what you call self-securing.
It's a security by obscurity. Just hand it to me. Let me just quickly go around the horn here and introduce our great group of guys. All of our techs are in here. Gary Baker, my original co-host here on the Internet Advisor.
And have a happy new year. Happy 2016.
Absolutely. Ed Rudell, good to have you on board.
Always great to be here. And when I was filling out my checks, I didn't mess up the traditional way. I actually put down 2017. So I skipped the entire 2016.
The entire year.
I for sure do not want to be older than I am.
It's getting a little more precarious as we go. Yes. Cal Carson, good to have you in studio.
Well, I mean, for Mr. Rudell, it'll probably be two resolutions. One, always push the mic button on before you talk. And resolution number two, you still using checks?
Yeah, I don't trust electronic stuff like that.
Oh, wow. That is it.
So when was the last time, Cal, when was the last time you actually physically wrote out a check?
I'm going to be, you know, I'm actually yanking this chain a little bit rougher than I should. I did write out a check last month.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, and before that?
Boy, I can't remember.
I usually do one, maybe two a month because I got some legacy people that I deal with. But everything else is pretty much click and pay.
No, so I do eight to 12 checks a month easily.
Wow. Really?
Wow.
So
Shane, how about you? Do you write checks still?
Well, I don't even know what a check is.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one in years.
So, I usually refill my checkbook once every year and a half.
Hey, if they're going to give me a free book of checks every year, I'm going to use them.
That's right. That's the...
Well, I will tell you that
line the bird's cage.
My daughter thinks that that is so old-fashioned. Just, you know, sending money to your friends via online check, right? She says, no, you just use pop money.
She was describing that 2 weeks ago last week's podcast.
And then Venmo, you know, you can use Venmo or Venmo, that, doing the same thing. So she thinks, okay, yeah, so I still have her take and write out a check that gets deposited directly into my account, so it's not really a check, but she does an online transfer. She says, Dad, that's so old-fashioned.
Well, when she was here last week, when we had all of our families
that's
in,
right.
She was describing how they would go out to eat, and instead of, you know, paying up and people looking for cash to, so they only have to fill out one, or one person pays the bill, she uses the Venmo,
She
instantly sends over, you know, $8.50 to her friend.
Can we see a prediction here? Can we see a prediction? I mean, I don't think I would have predicted that it would have gone as fast as it has.
But the one thing she said, she did not secure her phone. Later in the show, she said she doesn't password protect her phone.
She did on the way home.
There you go.
She goes, Dad, I should have done that long ago. And so she said it is now.
Dad would not let that go.
I don't believe any of the stuff that she said. She can, you know, Gary, have her take us out to dinner and demonstrate that they really work.
Well, so, but, you know, if you paid, then she'd send it to you. But, you know, if she paid, we'd all have to send it to her. Right.
Oh, so that's an application with absolutely no benefit at all. So, I thought that application was going to pay for my meal,
Shane,
and I wouldn't have to pay for
Shane,
it.
Shane, you have a younger daughter, or a daughter in her 20s, is it?
I do, yes. 24. Yeah.
Well, what does she use for? Does she pretty much into the.
She uses my check card. She uses my account.
I'm going to hear about that.
I take that back. She worked very hard for her money.
My check, you know, sounded like an app for a second.
Yeah, my check. Checkbooks back in the day were handy because, let's be realistic, you could write a check now for money you had later.
Have you heard the term kiting a check?
Yeah, float.
You know, it used to take 7 days for that thing to process. Yeah. Now it's instant, so that's kind of taken that away.
Well, not for everybody. Some places, they actually do a two-day float. I can buy stuff on my ATM card at Meijer, and it doesn't hit for 2 days.
Oh, wow. That's unusual.
So buy, eat fast, and hope you don't catch me.
Who's that, eat and run? Yeah. The old policy?
Dine and dash, yes.
I tell you what, done, there you go. What we're going to do today, by the way, Shane Hamblin, our last person who gets a formal introduction. He is our gaming expert. As a matter of fact, we've got some exciting announcements about that coming up near the end of the show. But what we're going to do today with the format of the program is we're going to kind of intersperse our comments on our predictions. And what we're going to do is on our homepage, when I post it, we're going to be putting down the entire list of predictions that the guys came up with. And they're between 3 and 5 for each person. But we're going to kind of pick on one prediction to focus on and talk about with each person here as we go on through the 2 hours of the show. In addition to that, we have Mike Amon calling us from California in just a minute, from San Jose. And he's always had a great way of looking ahead in terms of business and those trends going on in the brand new year. And in the second hour, Richard Steenen, our security expert, is going to be checking in. We'll be talking with him about some of the things he sees coming in the year 2006. That's all coming up on this hour of the Internet Advisor. Actually, these 2 hours of the Internet Advisor as we dust off our crystal balls and look ahead to the year 2016 and give you our predictions. Coming up in just a moment, Mr. Mike Amon from San Jose, California. Welcome to the 2016 edition of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, and we got the whole crew in here. And since this is our prediction program, one of the people we've had regularly on our show at this time of year is a man named Mr. Mike Amon, who is very much connected with the world of the Silicon Valley out in California. He's in the valley kind of next door to it, in San Joaquin. And Mike has always been, for instance, it's a delight to be there because he's from this area, knows this area. And we're talking with him now, this year again, about what he sees ahead in the year 2016. And Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Foster, and good to be with you guys again. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you, buddy. Listen, by one of the things that you noticed, I noted in your, and by the way, we're going to post all of these predictions, but one of the first things you talk about is the Internet of Things combining with 3D printing. How is that working?
Well, we're seeing platforms that just allow the connection of the Internet to physical hardware. The sensor technologies are just growing like crazy. And so you're going to be going to print actual custom items rather than those pieces of paper that we used to do over the Internet to our local print shop.
So in the Internet of Things, Mike, you're thinking that like my refrigerator will say you're out of corned beef, and it'll print some corned beef for me.
Not quite that. But on that, you will have a standard kind of order form that's tied into your refrigerator that will go to the grocery store and they'll deliver it to your door. Then you're still going to have to make it, or it's already prepared, perhaps. But I think, when you look at how we've come along with print shops, and you can walk in there and get color copies and all the rest, you're going to see a series of both plastic and metal 3D printers in these types of shops. And you're going to be able to go up on the internet and using software, devise whatever you want, and then print them out and drop by, or for that matter, they'll ship them to you by, Amazon.
You think like a piece for something, a part for something you're thinking of? Because I'm thinking of Ed, all the work that you do with cars and computers, that this would be great for you. You could just print it.
Right, right. And that was part of my predictions last year. But apparently the market just is finally catching up to my predictions.
And they're only Mike's predictions, too.
Right.
Right.
And one of the things I would see, what Mike said in the background, if you didn't catch it, was the sensor technology.
Yes.
Which means that on our laptops and on desktop monitors, for people that still use desktops, what he's talking about is, I believe, having a 3D scanning capability embedded in your laptop or your monitor.
Or your mobile phone.
Or your mobile phones.
Oh, wow.
So you could scan a device right there and then upload it and have it
printed.
Oh,
that's interesting. And burning from there. Yeah. Wow. Hey, I want to move on to one other thing because it's kind of interesting in terms of Detroit and the industry here, which is cars in the Motor City. You talk about the scaling of electric vehicles in the next 5 years with the demise of clean diesel. Now, so there's a couple of things in there. The demise of clean diesel. You don't see that coming back.
I thought that was
Jetta. Well, my favorite vehicle of all time was a Jetta diesel. But tell me what you mean by that, the scaling of electric vehicles.
Well, unfortunately, this act of what some people believe is fraud by Volkswagen and perhaps others is just not going to go away. And so what I am seeing is a clustering effect for electric vehicles in Silicon Valley. And, we often had talked about this in the past, that the car would become a computer with four wheels. Mm. And we are seeing this. We are seeing this, and we're seeing this happen very quickly in Silicon Valley. So diesel just isn't there from an environmental standpoint. And for those who understand, CAFE and the requirements for ever-increasing mileage, without that diesel component, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
So you're going to have to go to electric. CNG or natural gas just hasn't prevailed, even though Toyota is going after fuel cells.
Mm-hmm.
The infrastructure is just not there. So we're going to see more and more startups in electric vehicles, and not just, and I said vehicles, not just passenger cars.
Right.
There's another whole element for light-duty vehicles all the way through trucks. And some of these may be hybrids, you might still have some association with the diesel, but you're going to have an electrical component to that, which will lower the emissions and lengthen the miles.
You know what I'm seeing, and we talked about this a bit off the air, but I know that Rick Brett is not going to be able to be with us today because he's heading out to Las Vegas to the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. One of the things I'm seeing is it is all about autos this year, all about auto technology. And where it used to be about, refrigerators to talk to you, now it's all focusing on vehicles.
Well, and it's all around a lot of it around autonomous vehicles, right? And some of the research coming out of the University of Cambridge, which has really dramatically lowered the price of camera and computer technology using more cameras, not sensors. And because of that, the price point's starting to get down to the point where actually this will work. And everybody thought it would, but now we're seeing it.
Now, Mike, I have to tell you that you pass an article on to me that would be heresy here in Detroit. But I will mention it, however, and it's entitled Why Detroit is Moving to Silicon Valley. We thought it was going in the other direction. Defend yourself, sir.
Well, it's not it's not like all of Detroit, for that matter, is coming out here. But as I said earlier, software is driving the vehicle, and that's a center for software. And it also goes along with the Internet of Things hardware. So software and hardware coming together in the vehicle. You know, people talk about the driverless vehicle, and I really look at that and laugh because that's the last thing we need with a number of mindless car drivers that we have out there. But I do think that driver-assisted vehicle is something that is happening.
Yes.
And the safety devices, those cameras, which Gary just talked about, you know, I've had a camera on the back end of my car, but the newer cars, the Porsches and whatnot, have cameras in the front end, so you don't bang up your bumper in the front. So this is really happening, and happening fast.
Yeah, Cal, you had something?
Well, yeah, because now I'm standing up on my hind legs, and I'm saying things like, we're talking about the Internet of Things. The Internet is everywhere. Why do we even have to go to Silicon Valley when the Internet is here with us already? And if it's all about software, those are bits and bytes, electronic things that we just move around on the Internet. Who cares where you sit?
So, Cal, one thing that we have that no one in the world has, and that's 60-65% of all the venture capital, and it's really contained between Silicon Valley and San Francisco. So that's why people come here.
And you also have a tremendous number of the engineers out there. Gary, one of the predictions we'll talk about in a little bit that you had was that the job market being really rich here.
Right.
But one of the problems is the lack of people to fill the
jobs.
Can't
find enough people, right?
Yeah.
Can't find
And that isn't the case out there necessarily in Silicon Valley or in
Actually, Foster, it is.
Oh, really?
You know, there is an overall shortage of talent when it comes to really sophisticated coding. And there's battles between the major developers of this autonomous vehicle, recruiting people from either company into this venture. So if you're young and if you want to get into excitement of making things and operating them with software, you've got a pathway in the future here, and it can be autos, but it can be so many other things.
Absolutely. It is fascinating what's going on out there for the young person who is, as you say, willing to take the jump and to be really involved in some exciting things anywhere. But you mentioned, for instance, in practical terms, by the way, we're speaking with Mike Amon, who is a president and CEO of San Joaquin Partnership, and an organization that's involved in developing, promoting business out in the San Joaquin Valley, which is near Silicon Valley, one valley away, if you will. You mentioned the fact that Google is out there, Ford is out there, a lot of the technology is gathering on the horizon out there. Mike, thanks once again for your look into the crystal ball and for starting us off on this year of predictions for 2016. Have yourself a great year.
I will, and you too. It's going to be a good one.
Thank you so much.
Happy New Year, Mike. Say hi to Gloria.
Coming back in just a moment, we're going to put Mr. Gary Baker on spot for his predictions about this coming year as well on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor 2016 Prediction Edition. My name is Foster Brown. We have the entire crew in studio here with us, Gary Baker, Ed Burdell, Cal Carson, and Shane Hamlin. And guys, I want to talk about something that has risen this ugly hit. Nah, I'm just teasing about that, but something kind of interesting. Cal, you raised the issue. Why, if this Internet of Things we can connect with anybody around the world at any time and, you know, any way we want, why is it necessary for companies to go to someplace like California rather than hook up by GoToMeeting or Skype or whatever else it is and do their business intellectually?
I'm going to offload that answer to Mr. Baker because we just had that discussion.
All right.
Internet of Things is around hardware and whatnot.
Right,
But you're right. Internet everywhere, right?
Right.
And different types of communication. You can maintain a relationship. You can expand and extend it, but you can't form it online very well. We do if we have to, but we'd rather not. And it's the casual bumping into someone on the street or in the restaurant. And we do that now.
Do you buy that, guys? I'm just curious.
Oh, no, it makes sense.
I don't buy it only because it's one of those things where it depends on which way you want it to go. You know, if you're the sort of person that likes that that feel, that touchy-feely interaction, that sort of thing, then you will work that way and you'll continue to work that way as long as it goes. If you're a sort of person that likes to do it using technology, if you've got what they want, they're going to conform.
I have a different perspective on that. Shane, how about your thoughts? Any thought on that?
Being an ex-engineer myself, I'm a hands-on kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I like in front of me and in my hands to develop those kind of things. You know, the GoToMeeting and all this stuff, it didn't work for me as well as it might work for other things.
Yeah, but my thought is about money. Go ahead.
I'm in agreement complete with Gary.
He says you
can maintain a relationship, you can continue it, mm-hmm. but you can't start one.
Yep.
I mean, that's why in the old days we used to say the world revolves around Plano, Texas, as far as that's where Dell was
asked,
at.
And my all the son-in-law.
My
son-in-law for one time for a year
industry.
Or so worked for Accenture. Mm-hmm. He was flying to Australia, to Singapore, and all these places. And one time I said, Kirk, why are you flying all these places when you could, you know, pop a screen up and talk with these people? He said, no, you've got to be in that country.
It's about building trust.
Exactly.
Yep, it's about building
They want to
trust.
See you face-to-face. They want to shake the hand.
Yeah.
And I have my contention is it's about the money. And I don't mean that crassly.
No.
When there's money exchanging hands, you want to see the person.
No, it's not money. It's trust.
When
you need to establish trust.
It's really weird. Oh, so don't trust anything on the internet, right?
Well, of course not. Of course not. What are you think I'm a French model or something? Bonjour.
But what's really funny is that
Francais?
Long time ago. Wow, he can speak that stuff. All I can say is toast and fries. But a long time ago, I remember when I first was getting into computers, stuff like that, I used to always say, if I could just have audio on my computer, audio, so I can be able to talk to people. It's going the other way now. I want to text them first and then call. I actually had someone text my wife over the holiday, and this is what the text said. Call me. Holy crap, you had the phone in your hand. You had the number.
But you're interrupting. And so the point is, when you say, because my kids do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can,
I do that a
when
lot.
I have the opportunity, I'll call them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an invitation. When you got a second. When you got a second, do you mind calling me?
Yeah.
But it comes down to, it's interesting, I think
If a text comes in and it distracts me long enough for me to have to turn around going, oh, call them.
Well, I don't
so
pick
it's
up
like,
every text
So
either.
Now I'm distracted.
I will contend, I want to get to one of Gary's predictions, but I think I will contend that it is about relationships. And I think that's the interesting thing, the almost ironic thing about it, is with all this electronic information and communication, et cetera, you still want that personal connection.
And when you, and the point is, when you're having to develop trust, and people really believe what they're saying, but you have to say, do I trust what they're saying? Yeah. And you have to really make a value decision, because you're going to turn around and hand them, well,
X,
you're going to go on your computer and send them an electronic transfer of, you know,
millions.
Two million, right? Or more sometimes. And it's, you got to make sure that you really trust them.
Yeah, I really trust Gary because I can see him.
It's amazing how it's changed so much. How drastically the way of doing business has changed so much in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You still have the, you know, the GoToMeeting kind of thing that you can bring in.
Well. I use it a lot. I use it a lot.
10, 15 years ago, how were deals done? A couple drinks at lunch.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's how it was done. Now it's
two bowls of martinis.
Yeah, right.
and a whole lot of work in the background.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
and a whole lot of work in the background, and it's still done that way.
But it still comes down to that. Gary, I got to get to some of your predictions. We had talked a little bit about, with Mike Amon, about cars, and one of the reasons that things are changing is, and you point this out, is that autonomous vehicles are becoming a closer reality because of the price drops that have come
from some of
the equipment in there.
Some of the research, and primarily, I mean, it's being done all over the place, but this particular piece of research was done in the UK and the University of Cambridge, and it was around how do you replace some of the expensive sensors with pretty inexpensive cameras and still get the richness that it that you need to be able to recognize what a building is, what a car is, what a pedestrian is, and to be able to place the vehicle in space in between the lines of a road, for instance, and so far from the intersection without the assistance of GPS, because GPS sometimes can for just briefly can lose that signal.
Right, be disastrous,
and if you do lose that signal and you're relying on it, then you're then you have no more eyes or ears,
you're
right?
You're toast.
You're toast, yeah. That's that French part. But but really, when you can, when you have the technology that can augment GPS, and that's what you need, and it's always on technology. It's in within the vehicle, and that's what and it's now cheap enough that they can, without using those expensive sensors. So that's another, you know, major step forward in making this cheap enough to actually be usable by the mainstream public.
Well, Gary, help me
to understand. The camera, instead of the sensor, is looking at something. Isn't it feeding that information back to a computer or something so it does the thing it needs
to do? Yeah, it absolutely does.
So there's still a chance of loss of signal.
No, the computer would be on the car.
Within the car.
Still, in between the camera and the computer, is still a chance.
Oh, yes.
So well, how many people lose contact between their brain and their foot?
I was just going to say, the only...
Put enough alcohol in it?
The only time that their loss of signal is more prevalent is exactly what Ed just said, right? I would trust a computer in the cars around me way more than I trust the people around me on my way to work and on my way back every day. It's amazing. They don't stop. Computers don't gawk. So, I mean, that's wonderful there. That's wonderful there. When I'm driving as far as I do every day, I go through clusters of cars and bubbles where there's no cars and clusters of cars and then bubbles where there's no cars again.
As he's passing them all.
And as they're just, you know, and they're stopped because of, you know, three trucks all driving about the same speed, one in each lane, right? You're not going to get that with autonomous vehicles. It's going to be a steady stream of vehicles. You're not going to have gawker delays. You're not going to have accident delays. You're not going to have a lot of the things that we have to put up with.
They've got an invention already that works like that. It's called a train.
Well, and in some ways, they talk about putting cars together like trains.
We need more mass transit.
If we could get autonomous vehicles on the road, the trains will work better, too.
Yes. But I'm still stuck on computers don't gawk. You better patent that or something, because Google or Ford or someone's gonna is gonna suck that up, and we're gonna see it on billboards all over the place in about 5 years.
Yeah. Just make a T-shirt, Ed, and call it a day.
Internet Advisor: computers don't gawk.
Well, it's interesting. I think that a number of you have touched on this, and then we mentioned it before with Mike. The Consumer Electronics Show, which is coming in Las Vegas in a few days, Rick Broida, our gadget guy, is out there. As a matter of fact, going to be coming back, and next weekend is going to be doing an exclusive report for us from that CES. A lot of this is focused on autonomous vehicles that are out there as well.
And there'll be a lot of things that don't make it into most vehicles, but there'll be all sorts of technology that will. And that's the exciting part, is there's now, it looks like it's close enough to revenue that people are going from the, you know, it used to be the big research and little development, the big R, little D. Now it's the little R, big D. They're starting to actually put into production vehicles.
What I found early in the early 2000s, I was working for Daimler Chrysler Studios, and at that time we were writing about the technology that Mercedes was coming out. And Mercedes at that time already had the lane change technology.
It had
the rear view parking thing, and it had the look ahead as well.
Yeah, because you could afford it.
That's exactly
right.
It.
You could afford it.
To me, what's been interesting is how quickly now the technology is cascading.
Yeah, they're now putting in Civics and things. You
exactly.
Know, and Malibus.
Which I think is great, that the technology is not just in the most expensive ones, the most luxurious ones. Okay, Gary, hey, thank you for those predictions. We've got more. Gary's predictions in full will be posted on our homepage. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's none other than Mr. Ed with his predictions for 2016.
Of course.
On the Internet Advisor. Well, I hope you're enjoying this show of the Internet Advisor 2016 Prediction Program. Rich Luzinski, thank you very much for being our engineer in the background here, helping us keep on track. What we're doing here is that we're kind of sampling the predictions that our guests, the guys in studio, our entire crew is here, Gary, Ed, Cal and Shane, and we've invited some other people. Rick Breida, by the way, sent us some predictions, and we're going to be posting the full number of predictions they have, between 3 and 5 each. But we're going to be talking about maybe just one prediction from each one of the people. And so this time around, it's Mr. Ed Riddell's turn up, and Eddie, as always, I love it. You have this great take on combinations of technologies.
Well, it was a little bit of snarkiness or tongue-in-cheek in some of these, but, you know, we'll go with, you know, I was thinking about the merging of technologies and drones and those robotic floor sweepers. What are the Roombas?
The Roombas.
Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine, like, you could, like, dust the cobwebs off the ceiling and get those crevices and corners.
I love it. So you would put a drone, mate a drone with a Roomba.
Yeah. Why not?
Look out the canary.
Well, you know, this is the year of the drones, basically. But then the FCC, or was it the
FAA.
FAA. Right. Aviation, okay. Basically has put a kibosh on a lot of it. You have to do registration when it's over, what, a half a pound, I believe.
Yes,
up to 55 pounds. And if you register them before the 20th of January, you don't even pay the $5 for 3 years.
Right. And there's a whole bunch of discussions now about how much or where can I fly the drones around my personal habitat. I mean, this just doesn't go to the Roomba. I mean, drones are really nice because, I mean, how many times do you drive down the road and say gutter cleaning, free estimates and stuff like that? Well, you know, you could just take your drone and just fly it above your house and say, hey, I don't need my gutters cleaned this year.
Right, exactly. You know? There's a lot of stuff you could do
around your house. Or let it clean them.
All right, that's my next point.
I'm thinking about what Ed's talking about. Number one, you wouldn't have to register it because you'd be flying it inside your own house.
Right.
So you wouldn't be out in airspace. You also wouldn't have to register it until the dust bag had more than 55 pounds of dirt in it.
Or the cat.
Well, when it's more than 55 pounds, then you have to register it as a aircraft. Right. And less than 55 pounds, you have to register it as a drone.
Now, did anyone here get a drone for Christmas or know of a relative that got a drone?
My grandson got one, yeah.
No, I didn't get one. I wanted one.
I did get a fan, and the kid has a Roomba. Maybe I just duct tape them together.
Now, have you guys seen the internet videos that came out? And it was on the news, basically. It's a car that basically uses two of the fan motors to actually be able to climb
now,
walls.
I know that's only CG, character generation.
No, it's not. That's really...
Are you sure?
Yes, because the fan actually... Yes, it works.
Oh, it does?
Yes. Basically, it's a four-wheel vehicle and has the two fans that allows it to...
Yeah.
And it uses the force to push it against the wall as well as propel
it up.
It's
like the VTOL.
So this is the
VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. But this is like the first of real commercial use for a flying car.
Yeah.
It is. If it's real... Getty, are you sure...
Because I saw that it's got to be true.
That's what
Merci.
Bonjour.
But what you're pointing out, which is interesting, Ed, is some of the most exciting things that happen with technology are the combination of technologies that come together. And
someone finds a technology and they find an innovative way to apply it to something else. Like, you know, why not strap it on a skateboard and see if it'll climb a wall? And it works.
Yeah, one of the best ways to do innovation inside different industries is to take something that works in a different industry and adapt it to yours.
Right.
So I think, Ed, you're right on. Right? Yeah. We see that all the time where the combination of technologies is really... Neither technology really takes off. This is, sorry for the pun. But neither of them takes off until you combine them. And then now you've got a product.
Of course, when you really think about it, I mean, years ago, no one ever thought, gee, let's take a computer and shove it into a phone. And that's what we have today.
Yeah. No, who would have thought when they had a room you needed for an IBM that could ever be put together with a phone? And
yeah, put that thing in your pocket.
Did you ever use some of the early phones in the late 80s? Did you use them? I was working for a company that gave
you talking about like a bag phone?
A bag phone. Yeah. Exactly.
And that was very cool because it didn't have to be mounted in your trunk.
No,
right?
But I had one mounted in my trunk. I had one as well. And then
the bag phone was now the next innovation.
That was the next step because I had my brand new, it was a Camaro that I got with my very first car, and they drilled a hole in the trunk for it. But I was anxious to get this new technology, so I had it. But it was the old, you know, with the microphone with a button on it, and then I would be calling an operator, and the operator was the one then who would connect me to. So I'd say, operator, connect me to 3480, which happened to be the other person who was a field supervisor with me, and we would get in touch that way. But then we would communicate through the microphone, but it was like an over and out kind of thing.
Kind of like the beginning of Nextel.
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, it moved to the bag phone.
Yeah,
you're
half
right.
Duplex instead of a full duplex. Yeah.
Eddie, one of the things you mentioned down here is homeowners being comfortable with the whole wireless networking thing. With the Internet of Things, we're getting down to where we're going to have to be network engineers in our houses, it looks.
Well, not really. I mean, they're starting to make routers now, wireless routers, that have touch screens on them that have very simple interfaces. Oh. So, I mean, for under $100, you can buy yourself a new wireless router, dual band, right, with a touch screen on it, and you set up the security that way. You can grant people access. You could push a button, find your wireless key, and
so it almost sounds like this is going to be the year of the router.
Well, I mean, what it is a lot of people now, because they're becoming so comfortable with wireless devices, that they're going to find. They're going out intentionally and finding stuff to put on there, like their nests, yeah. You know, for home security
or the front door locker.
It's going to be products that are going to drive that drive the wireless at home even bigger.
Yes,
like Nest and then that Philips lighting system.
Yes, Philips the LED light bulbs. Oh. So what people are going to find that they're going to need to do is upgrade their wireless routers to support these. Multiple devices. Most people don't even realize it, but no. In my household, I have over 20 wireless devices that connect to my wireless router. And the earlier generation, just a generation ago, I'm talking about wireless router generation, the most devices you can connect up to it is 12. Okay.
Wow. So how do you get that many?
Oh, you got your refrigerator, you got your Roku.
No, I mean you have tablets, you have my smartphone. Every time my smartphone comes into the house with four people, that's four smartphones that have Wi-Fi enabled,
that's
right?
True.
Yeah, then you have tablets, your PCs.
Cable boxes.
You have your cable boxes, your wireless broadcast for your TVs.
Xbox, PlayStation 4.
Easy.
I mean,
20 devices.
And Amazon now has come up with this. Was it the Echo? That one that sits in the living room or kitchen, wherever it is. You talk to it, and it learns.
So this is what justifies what Michelle was talking about last week about Comcast getting 1 gigabit internet or higher bandwidths to come to homes, because
that's another interesting ripple.
You've got so much chewing it up.
That's another interesting ripple.
And we had another listener that posted on the InternetAdvisor.net website, and he says, "I have all these wireless devices, but whenever I power on this one computer." My wireless streaming stops working. And I said, you need to either invest in a new wireless router that supports dual band, because you're probably an older device that's bringing everything down, including your wireless streaming.
Oh, that's right.
Streaming.
And that's that principle we learned that
it runs as fast as the lowest common denominator, yeah.
Or what the person did is they were static addresses on their printers that their router is issuing for the device.
Printers,
that's
you mentioned another thing. That's another thing that's hooked up wirelessly.
Yep.
Printer. I have two printers that are hooked up, plus our cell phone.
All those parallel cables I ran through my walls all those years ago. I'm just kidding. I would not have done that.
Well, one of the things that I have heard along the lines of the Internet of Things is that there's a problem with protocols, having the same protocols for operation. That may become an issue, but definitely this is going to be the year of the router. Okay, Dave, thank you for that contribution. We're going to take a break right now. And in the second hour, we're coming back. We're going to be talking to Mr. Richard Steenen about security, but then we're also going to be getting Cal's look at the predictions for the coming year. And Shane is here as well to talk about some of the predictions for the gaming industry. And I may sneak a few in as well. It's a special program we're doing here at the beginning of the year, 2016. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, go to InternetAdvisor.net. As of Sunday night, and we'll post all of the predictions there for you to look at and enjoy, plus the podcast of the program. Thank you so much for joining us, and now stand by for hour number two of the Internet Advisor as we take a look at the year 2016, the year ahead. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, InternetAdvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to MITechNews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Thank you for joining us for our special prediction show for 2016. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. Entire crew is in studio. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and Shane Hamlin. And we're also going to have some reports on the future from people like Mr. Mike Brennan from MI Tech News and also Richard Steenen coming up this hour, all taking a look ahead in their crystal balls at what's coming up for us. The highlights of the year 2016 in technology. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned. Welcome back once again to the Internet Advisor, our second hour. And yes, this has been, for those of you who are looking for us live on WJR because of Michigan State basketball, this was pre-recorded there. But the good news is we got lots of ways for people to tune in to the program. And of course, you have. That's how you got here. But you might pass the word on that you can find us, our podcasts, by going to internetadvisor.net, of course, after Sunday nights, but also going to podcastdetroit.com. And that's where we're part of a new podcast network that's out there.
And we're also on iTunes, but you got to wait 2 extra days.
But you also have to carefully put this in. Don't put in Internet Advisor alone. Okay. You have to put Internet Advisor podcast feed. Otherwise, you get something that is just pieces of our whole program.
Oh, really?
I just discovered this the other day, and we're confirming it, but you have to look for Internet Advisor podcast feed. Then you will get all of our programs.
Oh, really? Okay.
Not just Internet Advisor, which we've been telling people. So that's why
Apple doesn't make the search engine, right?
Oh, man. They have had so many problems with searching in particular, yes. iTunes and so many other things. We're going to be getting to Cal Carson, matter of fact, a little bit, talking about Apple and his predictions for them. Mr. Rick Broida could not be with us right now because he's on his way out to CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. Just very quickly before we get to Mike Brennan, who's on hold here, Rick was talking about some of the things he expects to see in the coming year. Hoverboards. He says that they're going to pick up. And the price will be dropping on those things is probably the medical care.
I think there's going to be a fire sale on those somehow.
Oh, dear. Yeah, get them all together.
You know, well, they're having the same problem that the laptop manufacturers did and phone manufacturers did with lithium-ion rechargeable batteries.
Yeah.
And the manufacturing process isn't up to snuff, and there can sometimes be metal shavings, microscopic, in the lithium that they use to construct the batteries, and poof, they overheat and cause fires.
Yeah.
Brings new meaning to a hot foot.
Certainly does. He mentioned something that I think a number of you mentioned, which is wearables. He says they're not going to go anywhere. I love his pessimistic view here. The question is whether any one company can craft the perfect fitness band or smartwatch. That's the cue. My wife, Ginny, for Christmas, actually it was the day after Christmas, we went to Somerset, and I got her the Fitbit Flex, and she is having a ball with it.
Yeah, I had another friend that got a Fitbit, and just loves it.
So. She is loving it, and it's just enough technology for her, doesn't have to tell her everything.
Yep.
Let's see, and one other thing, he is the end of 2-year phone contracts, and that's something that is definitely happening.
Well, I think AT&T is the final one, right?
Yep.
So they kind of think that's already done.
Just announced.
Done deal this year.
All right. Mr. Mike Brennan is with us, and we normally go through the headlines, a sample of the headlines on MI Tech News. Mike, Happy New Year, and welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks, Foster. Always a pleasure.
Well, Mike, you took a look ahead at the year 2016, and you had a rather interesting comment, and that is you see mobile video consumption growing at an enormous pace.
Yeah, well, it's just following everything that's happening. Everything's going mobile. That includes video. And according to some studies I looked at, next year is where we cross the threshold where more video will be consumed online than on linear TV, meaning on cable or satellite. So we're crossing over. But it turns out that most people are watching that via their smartphone, and it's going to increase by the rate of 5 times next year. And in fact, more than half of the video consumed on the Internet will be consumed via mobile.
Well, actually, I know of a number of people this year even, they want to watch some of the bowl games on ESPN. They have cut the cords, so they don't have their cable.
Mm-hmm.
And they just went to ESPN and paid a little bit to get that. And then they get it on their cell phone. They can
or
go
tablet.
Out,
or
they can go out shopping with their wife and still watch the game. They love it. They love it.
Yeah, Big Ten To Go does the same thing. Big Ten Network, you can, if you pay $2 a month or something,
yep,
you can get Big Ten To Go, and the same thing. You can watch all the games.
How is that going to affect the content that is produced? I mean, and what are some of the other ripple effects of that kind of thing, Mike?
Well, I mean, if you look at, for instance, Amazon's got its own production studio now. I've been watching Man in the High Castle or whatever that's
right.
called.
Right, right. Yep.
And that's an Amazon internal production. HBO's been doing it forever. Showtime's doing it. So, I mean, all the premium cables are doing it. And what the other wrinkle they add to it is, hey, Showtime on the go or HBO on the go. And so they're trying to keep you tied to them, but then you can also view all this video on your smartphone or your tablet or whatever, so you can do it on the go. But, I mean, it's just people are tired of getting 250 channels and have being forced to pay for that and only really watching 20. So we're really the Apple TV and Google TV, it's all changing. And this is 2016 is the year it all changes.
It strikes me that along those lines, our way of using computers is going to change, guys, in the sense that, well, more and more uptake in terms of hardware of smartphones. More people will be getting smartphones that maybe didn't have them beforehand because they want to consume the stuff on the move. And it'll also mean smaller form computers rather than desktops. I mean, obviously, desktops are still going to be there. Laptops will still be there. But I think the hybrids will begin to be more what they saw. I was at the Microsoft store at Somerset just recently, and they have some small things, $200 for some of these things running Windows 10, and they've got a nice little 12-inch screen on that you could watch whatever you want to watch, and then handle your email and a few other things, and you don't have to worry about storing a whole bunch of stuff there. So I think it's going
to start moving to the cloud. It's all moving to cloud storage anyway. I mean, we're going back to the era of the dumb terminal. Remember that, Gary?
Right.
Back when we started out, it was the terminal just access the mainframe. Well, the new mainframe is the cloud. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, Mike, I know we're going to be looking forward to this year seeing some video coming up in MI Tech News. And for those of you who would like to find out more about that, visit our website, internetadvisor.net, or visit mitechnews.com to find more. Happy New Year, Mike. Have a great 2016. Well, we used to chuckle and call it the dark side, but it certainly has been the brilliant side for those who've invested in it. And we're talking about the world of Apple, the Macintosh world, which has provided us with some exciting things in terms of certainly of smartphones with the iPhone, really in many ways kind of ruling the mind space here, at least in the United States. Android, I think, leads in terms of aggregate or worldwide, but if you want to talk about some of the finest phones out there, you have to, I think, talk in terms of iPhones. And with us to talk about that world is Mr. Cal Carson. And good to have you here, of course, Cal. And you've got a few things that you've looked at in the world of Apple that you think are going to be probably the things that we'll be all taking a look at in this coming year. Which area do you think will be the... Is this going to be a big year for a new device out of Apple, do you think?
I'm actually going the exact opposite, and here's my litany of lies for this year. I'm actually going to say this, and this is going to sound weird, and Gary might even fall out of his chair on this one. I think this one is going to be the first year in a long, long time that you're not going to see anything terribly innovative come out of Apple. I think this year is going to be a lull in their storm. You know, they've been going great guns for years now. They've been bringing out things over and over and stuff like that. But I don't see anything on the horizon for this year. For next year, I see maybe some inkling of the autonomous car. But for this year, I think it's going to be kind of quiet.
That's interesting. So you see the car is the next big step.
The next really big thing that you'll hear from Apple will be that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I was going a little smaller than that, and I'm really looking forward to the second generation of the Apple Watch. I think the first generation kind of missed the boat and not,
it's the first generation, all fairness.
But uncharacteristic of Apple, they usually get it fairly well, even the first time, right? And that's why they've got the cachet that they do. And I think they missed a little bit.
That's the whole difference between Apple, Tim Cook, and Apple Jobs.
Yeah, that could be.
Apple Jobs, I don't even think we would have saw the Apple Watch last year when we saw it.
Yeah,
he would have said, you know, this thing's not going to hold a charge for like 24 hours, ain't coming out.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know? Figure it out or we're holding it till you do.
You know, in that sense, Apple is acting a lot more like, and to my great frustration in some ways, like the rest of the world, in a sense they've developed this beautiful hardware, but the guts of it, the heart of it, the software of it is often incomplete or it has got a lot more bugs in it than it didn't typically in the past.
No, I'm not sure about that at all.
I think so.
I don't think so. I think they're doing pretty good without bugs. They just don't have the features in the watch.
They don't have that They have a degree of it, but they don't have that real soul and that depth that comes from...
One of the things I'm hearing, for instance, about the iPad Pro is the problem what they're having with either getting enough of the pencils, the stylus.
It's called Apple Pencil.
But you have a short memory, because there've been all sorts of problems with the iPhone, right? I wouldn't upgrade. I like the iPhone. I disagree with the fact that it's the best technology out there. I don't think it is. And if you were to talk to most techies, they don't own an iPhone. They wouldn't own an iPhone because there's better technology.
Well, I would disagree with you on that one. But for the rest of us,
I think the interface is wonderful, and I think the content is wonderful, and that's why I have an iPhone and have for a long time.
I think most techies like to tweak and play with the device, and I think that's the reason why they like the open Android architecture more.
Yep.
Yeah, but you're nodding your head. You're saying for the quality
of the device for a consumer, I don't think there's anything better.
I agree with you there, but every time they just catch up to some of the innovation that is out there in the Android space. And we'd say that. Every time a new version comes out, we say, now it's caught up.
Which would make sense, because what happens, I think, is the difference between the two is the Android space is everybody tries something, go ahead, we want you to be creative, that sort of thing. In the Apple space, it's like, we want to do it, we want to do it right, and we want to make sure we're going to make money from it. So therefore, let them come up with the idea, we'll polish that rascal
and we'll
up
steal it
and make it really good.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like I said, I have an iPhone. But most of the execs I know have an iPhone, and almost all of the real techies have Androids.
Yeah. And Ed, you're nodding your agreement to that in terms of what you see around you.
Yeah, as far as, you could play a lot more. You can modify, you can install applications much simpler on this. You can root it much simpler.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Ed, pardon me, Cal, you, and I want to move kind of quickly through this, but when you see a lower cost watch coming out with some of the same feature set.
I am predicting that Apple will put out as opposed to a second generation. I won't call it second generation. I think they're going to maintain what they already have for a model. Mm-hmm. It'll always be there, because I think that's kind of like their Excelsior, their jewelry line.
Yeah.
I believe they're going to put out a second version of it that's going to be lower cost with a reduced feature set on it.
Okay. But Apple TV, tell me about that. You've got an interesting comment in here. You say it's going to form a major alliance with a major provider for content.
Apple TV is innovative. It's a really cool piece of hardware. The biggest thing that it's missing is it doesn't have really cool content. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to merge up with someone, and I don't think it's going to be a network. I think it's either going to be a cable company or somebody like Netflix, and they're going to draw their content from there.
Yep, and I remember when Apple announced the new Apple TV, you were speculating that at the time, because it seemed like there was a big hole in the presentation where Apple was hoping to have this partnership signed up and it didn't happen. And you said that at the time. It's like they missed out, but they had to deliver the product anyways.
Yeah, it's about content now. The mechanics are cool. The thing works, but they really need content. Yeah. If they do content and they get something going on the Apple TV, then that speculation of the big TV that Apple might make one day will probably come to fruition.
Hmm. Okay. Let's see. The other thing that you had down here, Apple is going to be offering a boot camp version of iPad Pro?
I think they're going to realize that they've got a really great platform with the iPad Pro. But if they
let's explain to people what the iPad Pro is, just to kind of step back for a second.
Basically, it's a 12-inch iPad that works really well with a stylus, more commonly known as the Apple Pencil, that you can do things with. So it's, 4 inches larger than... or 3 inches larger than the 7-inch iPad that they have out there.
Also has a keyboard.
It also has a keyboard that you can attach to it as well. But I think they're going to see a market advantage if they can allow you to run, for lack of a better way to do it, Windows on app iPad Pro.
And like I think they do now. Yeah. Like they do now with their notebooks, right?
Yep.
That is very interesting. So that way, I mean, that would make them much more direct competitors then with the Surface, for instance, the Surface Book, which essentially is kind of the same thing.
It would give choices. I'll put it that way. Whether it be a direct competition, I'm not really sure, but it would definitely give them choices.
I was hoping he was going to say they might come out with an iPad that actually supports an SD card. We'd all like to see that, the expandable.
You have the cloud. You store it up in the cloud.
Yep. That is interesting.
But I'd still like to have, and you and I are just now on the opposite side of where we normally are. Because right. I always said everything should go to the cloud. There's time and place to have an SD card or a USB. Wouldn't put a USB there, but an SD card.
One of the things I saw when I went into the Microsoft store at Somerset, which is just kind of an interesting experience for me, and what they had available were a lot of, like, $200 was the range. Matter of fact, they had a Lenovo there, a 15-inch screen, not touchscreen, but a 15-inch laptop that was there for like $300. $300 for a 15-inch Lenovo, and it was a beautiful machine. But there wasn't much storage. They had an SSD and had a solid state drive in it.
Yeah,
and but it was a smaller solid state drive. And to the point of the cloud is, all the ones they had there in that $200, $300 range had smaller drives to save stuff on the machine, all going to the cloud. There was a lot of it going to the cloud.
There was a time when if you wanted to get a cheaper computer, a cheaper laptop, just buy the 17-inch. Because they had so many 17-inches that they had to give away that you could get a larger screen and cheaper.
Okay. Yeah, well, when you say
the 15 is a lot cheaper than, say, the 11-inch.
And it wasn't a touchscreen, and I think that was big...
Right, the touchscreen, the bigger touchscreens are more expensive, but the regular screens aren't.
The other thing is that, for Gary's sake, although it's not convenient, if I have my iPad and I just use AirPlay and I just connect to my Mac that's sitting right next to me, I can stick a SD card in it and just copy it right onto there.
Mm-hmm. Through what? Through
AirPlay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you can.
There are ways to do it. It just doesn't have the port right on the device.
Well, I think that's
if you're out in the field would be a little bit cumbersome.
There you go. That's what we should invent, is something about the size of a, maybe an inch by 3 inches, and it has AirPlay in there, and it provides me portable storage.
Okay. Don't say any more. We're going to patent this. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
And that, folks, is how the big ideas roll. Cal Carson, thank you so much for that look at Apple. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to be talking with Mr. Richard Steenen about the security world and what we can look forward to in 2016. And then we're going to have a big report from Shane Hamlin about gaming and what's going to be happening there, including an exciting new program coming out from Shane. We'll tell you more about that as we continue on The Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the host and the producer of The Internet Advisor, along with our crew in studio here, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Shane Hammond. We've been talking about predictions for the year 2016 in technology. And if you'd like to hear the full broadcast, you can join us on our podcast, and you'll find that at internetadvisor.net. That says on Sunday nights, and that's tomorrow night. And then you will also find us at podcastdetroit.com, just a couple places. And also, if you go to iTunes and look for Internet Advisor podcast feed, you'll find the program there. You'll find the full one. We're delighted to have with us right now somebody who has been a regular guest on our show throughout, not only this past year, but many years, and that is Mr. Richard Steenen, who is the president, and the leader over at IT Harvest, and has been a commentator on security, national and international security online for many, many years. Richard, thank you for joining us here at the beginning of 2016.
It's a pleasure, Foster. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy
very
much. Happy New Year.
Boy, we ended the last year on a really sour note, didn't we? Right at the very end.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about the year in review for 2015 a lot. And it is definitely the year that, okay, we're all done being surprised by the levels of breaches that occur, but that the types of, attack methodologies that have been used have been fairly unsophisticated. It came home when I was at a dinner event with Andy Osment, who's the Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity at DHS, Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they had responded to over 1,000 incidents, of breaches inside federal government. And out of 1,000, only a handful could he classify as sophisticated. All the rest were merely phishing attacks, right? Mm-hmm. People send an email, you click on something or you download something, and you're breached. And I think my prediction for 2016 is that as people get better at fending off the simplistic attacks, we're going to see these sophisticated attacks that, you know, go beyond just sending somebody a link or getting them to download something, and start using some of the, you know, the methodologies that are possible. And one in particular, I call autonomous attacks, and that you won't have any opportunity to look at what's called the cyber kill chain, you know, the reconnaissance phase, weaponization phase. You know, the stuff will just come in and get what it needs and leave, very much like Stuxnet did. So we've seen through Stuxnet what it looks like. Nobody's had to invest the millions of dollars that it took to, you know, craft and architect Stuxnet. Mm-hmm. But for some targets, you know, the defense industrial base, major governments, major manufacturers, or huge databases of financial information, it'll be worth investing that much, and we'll start to see evidence of that kind of attack in 2016.
You know, Richard, I agree with you that the autonomous attacks are going to step up, and we saw that with Stuxnet and a few others. I'm unsure if we're going to see less of those simplistic attacks that you mentioned. Our main weakness still is our own employee base.
Yes.
And it's remarkable they're still responding to phishing attacks, to email that comes into them. They think it's their boss that says, please go do this, please send a check here. Mm-hmm. And there's still way too many people that are falling for it. That in the industry-wide, when IT security does an exercise to try to help employees become aware, 25% to 26% of the employee base that gets these phishing attacks actually knows that they're a phishing attack. Everybody else is responding.
Ouch.
And I don't see that changing. Do you, Richard?
Oh, not at all. So that's the interesting thing about being in this business is the attacks never die off and get replaced by a new methodology. The new methodologies get layered on what's already there.
Yep.
So they'll continue to be those. But Gary, I'm not one who says our problem is the employees. There's a technology solution for phishing attacks, right? You know, the problem is that we allow employees to open links without ever inspecting them. And the technology is completely there. You know, many, many different solutions available that will prevent you from just opening and downloading things. And it'll check them first. It'll throw them up into the cloud, detonate them mm-hmm. in a virtual environment, extract them, see if they're malicious before they're in. It's just that most organizations just haven't spent the money.
Right. They won't spend the money to stop something like that. And it does create a problem for productivity, right? Because it does take a little longer to do all this.
No, Gary,
close it down. Yep.
Gary, one of your predictions was that this coming year there'd be a lot more money spent on IT. And I'm going to guess, Richard, that would you project ahead that there'll be more money spent in 2016 than on better security?
Yeah, 24%. So we're talking 2015, I set the number at there was $105 billion spending. So that's essentially another $25 billion on top of that.
Yeah, and it's still not enough, right?
And where will most of it be in this area where you have the employees that you're talking about? That area, will that be mostly there?
That and enhanced privacy protection, so a lot more encryption. Everywhere.
Ah, okay.
Encryption is a driver because we've seen threat actors now that are attacking our communications. If you have to encrypt communications, data at rest, and it just as we move into that realm of encrypting everything, then you have to protect your keys, your encryption keys, because some sophisticated attackers like the NSA go after keys before they try and decrypt anything, right? So they're going to attempt to steal your keys. And to protect your keys, oh my gosh, you have to do every single thing that the IT security industry and people like Gary have been talking about for 15 years.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think you're right. I also see a lot more being spent on employee awareness just because of this problem. So training that sometimes doesn't even hit the security budget, but increased security training coming out of the training budget also will help us be a little safer anyway.
And I think training for security should be focused on the IT staff,
mm-hmm.
Because they're the ones, you know, with their hands on the buttons.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So it's they not should understand security.
No, I know. I understand that about the IT because I've worked for several different companies, and it seems like that the security training they give employees is really not to protect the data. It's to point the finger at the employee for termination when the stuff hits the fan.
Yeah.
And so the company's not liable. The employee becomes liable.
Hey, the company's always liable.
By the way, but the company's always liable. Yeah. That's true.
We're talking, by the way, with Richard Steeden, who is chief analyst at IT Harrison, is an expert on security nationally and internationally as well. You are doing now on a regular basis a monthly broadcast about security on the PodcastDetroit.com network with Dan Lorman, who used to be the Michigan
CISO.
Chief Security Officer.
Chief Security Officer for the state of Michigan. He's now independent. You and he are doing a fascinating program, by the way. And we are going to be putting a link to that show. In the last show for M Squared TechCast last year, you and he did an excellent job of analyzing last year and looking ahead. And you had much more time to do it than we're going to have today. So I'm going to include that in our notes as well. But one of the things that I heard him say, and I want to check out with you, is... And I've been thinking, I looked at my predictions for last year, and thank God it didn't happen. But I'm wondering if we are going to see a major infrastructure attack this year, where they're going to go after a power grid. They're going to go after, you know, some major, they being whoever, is going to try to make a mark going after one of these major systems.
Well, as you know, it's hard to predict the timing of future events, but I think everything is lined up, and the indicators are there that have, at least in the past, have always turned into attacks, in that we have vulnerable systems that are actually completely mapped by a site called Shodan, and we have reconnaissance attacks against those that are attributed to Russian hackers with two families of malware that seek out control systems. And then all we need is motivation, and boom, we've got an attack. So.
Oh. Perfect, a perfect storm.
You know, because I'm thinking back at the end of 2014, you couldn't go through a news broadcast without people talking about smart grid, and then you don't hear anything about it in the last 13 months, 14 months.
Yeah, even though it's the smart grid itself is, you know, here in Michigan, it's being rolled out, and you know, I've gotten offers to somehow access through my TV the power controls on my house and stuff. So it's all there.
I see. Smart grid. I got you. Okay.
Yeah. But smart grid is an endpoint thing. So it's, you know, the controls and monitoring at each location. So, the meter outside your house.
Mm.
I think the threat there is the, you know, people will figure out how to hack them and report, you know, lower usage or something like that.
You Richard, I'm sorry, just maybe one final closing question. And there's lots more to talk about, folks, and I hope that you will stay connected to us and to Richard on his program at podcastdetroit.com on a monthly basis with Dan Lorman. Yep. The music says we come to the end of the segment. This is what we do with our prediction programs. We kind of give you a little hors d'oeuvre about what's coming down the line. So we'll have to get back to you, Richard, to get more information about those groups like the Equation Group. Thank you much for being with us, and have a great 2016.
Thanks, guys.
Take care,
Richard. Stay tuned, folks, because we're going to wrap up our look into the crystal ball at 2016 with Shane Hamlin looking at predictions for the gaming industry in 2016. Thank you so much for having joined us today for our Internet Advisor look into the year 2016. Coming up this next weekend, we're going to have Rick Broida with us doing a live broadcast. He is going to CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, and will be our man on the spot out there. And next January the 9th, he will be in with us in studio with a live program talking about what he's gotten out there, all the fun gadgets that he's gotten to see and play with, and in some ways take a peek into the future of electronics.
Freebies, we have to remind him about
freebies. The swag. Yeah. Get a big swag bag for us and bring it back, all the good stuff.
So are we going to start calling him Scoop Broida?
That's right. As well as the cheapskate and the gadget guy. Thank you very much, Mr. Rich Luzinski, for engineering our program today and doing a great job of that. All right, we're going to wrap up things here with Shane Hamlin. Shane has been kind of the quiet partner here, guarding his voice.
Yes, I'm I'm actually reserving my voice today.
That's
so
right.
I'm not talking too much, but yeah, I'm getting over a sickness, and I apologize for everyone.
No, I'm glad you could make it in here today, because you're going to be talking about the gaming industry, a big, big part of what people do on their computers.
Well, I mean, I like to think of myself as a gamer. I'm a huge gamer, but I mean, I am a tech. I mean, that's what I do for a living. That's where I pay the bills, but my love and passion is video games and radio, and that's what I've been doing for many years. And, you know, you think, well, you know, why is video gaming so important, or why is it so big? And if I give you some numbers, I mean, 50% of video gamers are males between 18 and 50. I mean, this is not, you know, 16-year-old people.
No.
They're not 12-year-old, you know. In a large number, there's a 27% of that 100% is over 50 that actually game.
Wow.
So, I mean, the males have it widespread on video gamers. Right. It's just not, you know, the 12-year-old neighbor kids playing video games anymore.
God, it's just killing me to think somebody's 50 years old down in somebody's basement, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I'm 47. I mean, I'm not far from 50, and I love video games.
Okay, good.
They are not in the basement. They're in front of their 60-inch
TV
in the living room in a house they've purchased for the gaming industry.
On an Xbox One.
Oh, my gosh.
We've changed. We've gone high-tech, and we're no longer hiding in the basement. We've come out.
Yeah, we're in the living room now.
Hugely profitable industry, too, isn't
it? It's one of the largest. It beats the movie industry every year. Well, now this year I don't know about with Star Wars, but yeah, it does.
With all the virtual reality, getting down to the right price point to be really consumer-oriented, you put a fork in it. You don't believe that's going to happen, or even augmented reality.
That was one of my predictions. I think we're going to finally put to bed this virtual reality with gaming.
When it got cheap enough.
Well, here's the thing. There's not enough gaming companies that are on board with this. For one thing, gamers, you got to remember, gamers just don't, a lot of them do, but most hardcore gamers will sit on a game for hours at end. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the headache coming off a VR session for 2-3 hours? I mean, it would just be insane. I can't imagine that coming off of one of those sessions after 3 hours. I mean, your head would just probably pound. There's just not enough. Those large game companies like EA and Bethesda, these companies that produce these games that are coming on board with VR.
But there's even bigger companies that have invested so much money, and they're now coming out with, you know, under 100. Google's got Cardboard that's coming out for, you know, it seems like dollars.
Correct.
Right?
I mean, you can own one of those for fairly cheap, but if you don't have any really cool game content to play on it, it's not going to matter one bit.
It also sounds like part of the challenge is just the physical problem of using it. They've still got a long ways to go.
It's a long ways away. I mean, just think you can pop on these headsets and play, you know, Call of Duty. It's just not, it's not there. It's not going to happen because these are Twitch games. These are very minute, quick response games that if there's any bit of a lag it's over. The gamers will reject it completely and it'll just go away.
So there's a lot to do with virtual reality to make it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to walk around a room and play, you know, mole smash and smash moles that pop out of your furniture, fine.
Whack-a-mole.
But whack-a-mole. for hardcore gaming and gaming, you know, Call of Duties, even some of the, you know, Minecraft. I mean, that's still, they did a little demo, but it's still a long ways away.
Can you imagine how cool it would be to play? Because I've never played any of those games, but I've seen the commercials. Yeah. And I think it'd be cooler to sit in my room with a Call of Duty helmet on, just like the guys I see in the show shooting and stuff like that. I mean, what's the purpose? Why are they wearing helmets?
Trust me, I'm not saying that it wouldn't be cool.
Okay.
I'm just saying it's going to disappear for a while because it's just not there. The technician.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to go back into the labs and they're going to work on it some more.
I'm not sure exactly, but okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
okay, let's,
for gaming, yes. I can tell you that right now. For gaming, it is going to go away because there's just not enough. There's no producers doing anything for it.
Yeah, and that's one of the keys.
I mean,
is it producing for it?
Yeah,
it's all about content.
For it. It's all about content. I mean, look at Nintendo. Nintendo is another one of my predictions. Nintendo's about ready to go bye-bye, and I never thought I would see the day that have a Nintendo system out there. But if they don't get this next launch ready or right, it's going to be the end of them because it's all about game content. And you can't release consoles or game devices without that popular game content. And Nintendo's going to do it again. They just did it once before just recently with their U, and it just flopped. It was one of the worst game launches in history. And they're coming out with another one, the NX. And if they don't have a major title for that release, like a oh, a Zelda or
Mario.
Mario, they're going to fail completely.
So they've been coasting along, it seems, on their past successes. And
correct.
It's time to put up shut. Now, you mentioned game consoles.
Yes.
And one of your predictions is that there's going to be a big price drop coming.
Yeah, I mean, $400, that's great for the first release when they're new. You're going to see this year, early this year, you're going to see a huge drop, $100. It's going to go down to $299, $250. For the new gen consoles. And what that'll do is it's going to make room for, then that'll be the kind of the entry level console. It's going to make room for the new consoles coming out announcing for next year. What you're going to see is, I think the very first person is going to, or the first company that's going to make that move will be Xbox or Microsoft. They're going to come down with a real slim entertainment only unit. It's going to be cheap, like $99, and it's going to be basically going after like the Apple TVs, the Rokus, and that kind of thing. Entertainment only, no big video gaming, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because didn't Microsoft announce earlier this year that 60-inch TV with that they were going to use for inner presentation, manufactured here in the United States?
The hub.
Yes. And we really didn't hear that much about it.
Mm. You know? It's still there, though.
It's still there.
And their shop in New York, their flagship store, they were saying that they have one of the hubs in there. And again, I would imagine this is for very select groups of, and commercial, industrial or corporate use.
And I'm hoping they don't name it Xbox One or Xbox, because I think when someone gets it at home and they open it up and thinking they're getting an Xbox and it's just for entertainment only.
But you see, that's interesting. So you see, in a sense, the game console moving into this area of the Roku and the Apple TV.
Well, I think.
Or Fire with Amazon. And becoming kind of like the center for your entertainment?
Correct. I mean, well, it already is. It kind of is now. I think because everything's going so cloud-based with the games. I mean, everything is so, like we were talking about earlier, everything is cloud-based. And you don't need these big terabyte hard drives anymore and these huge. They're going to be these dummy terminals that all they're doing is just a hub. And you're connected in with your Microsoft account. I say Microsoft because that's who's really leading with this kind of continuity, this whole test.
Well, not necessarily, because Apple has the AirPlay and all their devices talk over a local network, and you're right, but you could stream cloud-based content.
Yeah,
and so Microsoft's probably going in the same direction as well.
Correct, but you can't jump on your hub and play Call of Duty with Apple.
No.
And you can with, I mean, that's the thing. If you can't play those big title games.
That's interesting that the games drive it.
The games really drive it. I mean, it's huge.
Maybe talk about your last thing here, Shane, before you wrap things up here. And that is, you see a jump back in time machine to access passes.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to go to access passes now. Instead of paying, $50 for a game, you're going to pay $4 a month for the whole library of their games. EA does it now. You can pay $4.99 and play their whole library vault of games.
Wow. So all subscription service, similar to what Adobe does with all their software.
Adobe, Microsoft, the gaming industry is going to see a huge drive to that this year.
They're going for a continuous stream of income rather than the one big hit.
Correct.
Shane Hamlin, thank you so much for guarding your voice and being there for us.
Thank you.
Shane, by the way, is looking to start his own new radio program on the podcast Detroit.com network coming up this year.
The 17th of this month, Pwn Radio is coming back on the air. We did it a long time on 97.1, so we're ready.
Look for that. There's something else coming up in the year 2016. Folks, thank you so much for being with us. Look for the complete podcast of the 2 hours of this show, all of our predictions. Guys, thank you so much for your predictions and for sticking around. And for the rest of you, stay here on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.